Dr. Benjamin Levy. I'm the Clinical Director of Medical Oncology for the Johns Hopkins Kimmel Cancer Center at Sibley Memorial Hospital. Thank you for listening to my podcast. Today we're talking to Matt Ladra about radiation oncology, proton therapy, and the new proton center that will be coming online in the fall of 2019 that we very much look forward to having. So Matt, tell me about the pediatric radiation oncology program at Sibley and the collaboration with Children's National Medical Center that we have.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is a really interesting collaboration. It's a collaboration between Johns Hopkins and Children's National, which are not affiliated, but as Johns Hopkins expands its Sidney Kimmel Cancer Program in D.C., a large part of that will be pediatrics, especially since we're building a proton center, which, as we'll probably discuss, will attract a lot higher population of pediatric patients. So as plans for building the Johns Hopkins Proton Center in D.C. evolved, they were approached by Children's National, who asked if we could come up with some type of collaboration. Now, previously, as is the case for most children's hospitals, there are no radiation facilities in the children's hospital. Fortunately, the proportion of kids who need radiation is actually very small. So to keep a very expensive, high upkeep proton machine, the physics staff, the shielding, it doesn't really make sense for a pediatric hospital to have their own. So typically these hospitals collaborate with an adult center. And in the past, Children's National had collaborated with George Washington and Georgetown and Inova, but they really wanted a pediatric radiation oncologist of their own and a centralized system for their kids. So they solicited Johns Hopkins to hire someone for that position, and that is how my job came about. It's a really unique situation in that I have both, I'm faculty of both Children's National and Johns Hopkins, and so I have access to the doctors and the research trials at both institutions. So we've been doing this for about 2 years now, and it's gone really well. We've treated over 150 kids and given about 4,000 individual radiation treatments thus far.
Wow. In the pediatric cancers that you generally treat with radiation include, which cancers do you really focus on in the pediatric patient population?
Yeah, so we do treat a wide variety of cancers, but I would say the number one is probably pediatric brain tumors, mm-hmm. tumors that are unresectable and can't be removed completely with surgery. Radiation can often take the place, or as an adjuvant, helping to reduce the risk of recurrence after a surgery has been done. Okay. Other tumors that we treat often are Hodgkin's lymphomas. Lymphomas and leukemias are typically very radiosensitive. We treat a lot of soft tissue sarcomas. And we do a lot of transplant with the bone marrow transplant team, so radiation is often used in conjunction with high-dose chemotherapy for transplant.
So in the context of this collaboration, is it fair to say that any patient who's being treated at Children's who needs radiation therapy for pediatric cancer, many of these patients are going to be referred here, or all these patients are going to be referred here for proton therapy?
That's correct, yes. Every once in a while there would be a patient who has limitations in terms of transport, and it may be easier for them to get treated at one of the other proton centers that are in existence or coming online at Maryland or in Virginia. But yes, because of the collaboration we have and the pediatric specific staffing, most, if not all, will be referred here. I think that's one of the things that both Hopkins and Children's National has done really well, is provided us with a infrastructure to really have an excellent pediatric center. We have not only myself, who's pediatric trained specifically in proton therapy and pediatric radiation, but we have a child life specialist here on the premises to help the kids get through treatment. We have pediatric anesthesiologists from Children's National who come every day to provide sedation services for the young patients who can't sit still for for the radiation treatments. We also have a pediatric nurse practitioner and a pediatric trained nurse for these kids. So we're very lucky to have all these resources, and I think it makes a difference in the way patients get through the system and the stress that it takes off of the families.
Right. I think having that specialty is real important for the patients, but also creates the continuity for these patients who are coming from a pediatric hospital to an adult center that has these dedicated services to pediatric malignancies and pediatric patients with malignancies. So that's...
Absolutely, yeah. And that was one of the reasons why Children's National pushed for this relationship, is that when they sent to other centers who treated pediatrics every once in a while when the need arose, but were not designed to treat pediatric patients, there were a lot of things that were lacking in terms of these support services. And so that was one of their main aims with this program. And I think it was very, it was a wise move on their part, and it's really made this experience so much better for the pediatric patients.
And just, you know, broad strokes, high level, these patients are not admitted to the hospital here generally. These are outpatient procedures. Patients are, while they may have been treated at Children's before, this is not something where they're transferred from hospital to hospital. Or is there some of that goes on?
Yeah, no, there's both, and that's actually one of the first things we really had to establish when opening a pediatric program here, was how we're going to get kids back and forth from the hospital at Children's National to Sibley, because, as you know, Sibley has a neonatal wing, and we give birth to babies here, but then that's mostly an adult hospital, so we don't have inpatient units for the kids. So most of the kids getting radiation are going to be outpatient, but a lot of them will get admitted for a period of time to get chemotherapy. A lot of them get chemotherapy with their radiation, and so we do have about 2 or 3 ambulance transfers on average per day from Children's National.
Okay. So describe your background, your education, and how did you end up interested in the pediatric population as it relates to radiation therapy?
Yeah, so I did my medical school and my public health degree in international health at Tulane in New Orleans, and during that time, I really took an interest in oncology. I really liked the patients. You see a lot of, in some of the other pediatric specialties, you see sort of the same types of cases, and they seem to affect the same population of patients, whereas with oncology, it affects everyone, every race, every socioeconomic class, and in pediatrics. And so I really saw a wide variety of the community. And these oncology treatments are long, both with chemotherapy and with radiation, so you really develop a good relationship with the families and the patients. I didn't really discover radiation until my third year of medical school, and I was sort of hit with the decision of what to do radiation oncology, which is its own separate residency, or pediatrics, to do the pediatric hematology oncology. And I actually, to help make the decision, I took a year off, and I went to, I got a research internship with St. Jude, and they sent me to Morocco to actually work with the leukemia patients there, helping set up oncology services in the public hospitals in Rabat and Casablanca. And so I did a year of oncology and realized I really loved the patients and the research behind it. And so I came back and applied for a radiation oncology residency, and I ended up doing that in the University of Washington in Seattle, where I continued to sort of focus on pediatrics. And after that, at that time, proton therapy was really sort of becoming more prevalent. And so I decided to do a fellowship, and I was accepted at Massachusetts General Hospital, the Harvard Proton Center, for a fellowship that was going to be adults and kids. And
that
I actually,
1 2-year fellowship, or
it was a 1-year fellowship, okay. And it was supposed to be adults and kids. And after I was accepted, they were asking me what I was interested in. I said, really, my focus is pediatrics. And so they said, well, if we could come up with more funding, would you like to be the first pediatric proton fellow? And I said, sure. And so they found funding actually for 2 years. And so I did. Wow. So I was the first pediatric proton fellow in the U.S. Now there are about 5 graduates in a couple different programs.
Small fraternity slash sorority.
It is. Unfortunately, okay. It's a small need, but it was it was a great experience. And after that, I took a job as the director of pediatric protons at center in Knoxville, Tennessee, until they offered me the opportunity to do the same thing starting the program here.
Wow, so you really are on the leading edge here, and you've picked wisely your field. I think like medical oncology, and I'm a thoracic medical oncologist, you have witnessed the dramatic changes that have occurred in the treatment paradigms for these patients. And obviously proton therapy, as you've mentioned, has been front and center. We're hearing more and more about proton therapy and the advantages it may have over traditional radiation. But certainly it's landed front and center for the pediatric population. So can you talk to me just briefly about what proton therapy is, and how does it differ from regular radiation therapy? And then finally, what are we doing here at Sibley with this proton therapy?
Yeah, absolutely. So proton therapy is radiation, and conventional radiation, we typically use photons, which are generated by linear accelerator. Photons are very light, and they can get to the energy and the depth that we want to treat a tumor at, but they end up being very, after they interact, they kind of bounce around. About 30% of them actually go farther than we want them to. Protons are much more massive.
So by doing that, the photons that you are directing, they go further than they're supposed to. That creates more toxicity for the patient?
It creates exit dose, where normal tissue that doesn't really need to get treated gets treated, and that can lead to increased toxicity.
Okay. So you're radiating potentially parts of the body that don't need
exactly
radiation. Okay.
Exactly. So protons are much more massive. They're about 2,000 times more massive than the electrons we generate with conventional radiation. And they stop much more abruptly. So you can shoot protons, you can aim protons at a target, at a tumor, and 0% of it exits, goes where it shouldn't. And there's actually a lower entrance dose too. So when you put it all together, protons reduce the amount of excess radiation that someone gets by about 1.5 to 3 times, depending on the size and location of what you're treating. So it's important to note that protons don't have a higher cure rate than conventional radiation, but they reduce the rate or risk of toxicity.
So that's safe to say that the real advantage here is more with toxicity than efficacy.
Absolutely.
Okay. And in terms of what we're doing here, given this technology, given the discrepancies potentially in toxicity between protons and traditional radiation, what's the vision here at Sibley with this type of technology?
Yeah, so you know, there have been some controversies in proton therapy in that to generate these very heavy particles, they're very difficult to steer. So you need a whole different system to do it, and you need very expensive magnets and a lot of space. And so by the time you build the center and the upkeep, the actual cost of proton therapy can be anywhere from 1.5 to 2.5 times the conventional radiation. To justify that cost increase, we need good clinical data that shows that there is a benefit to protons. We know that just the reduction in dose makes a difference, but it's often very hard to show long-term differences because everyone's oncology experience is so different, everyone's surgery is so different, and the location of everyone's tumor. So for those of us who do this and have seen this in patients, there really is a striking benefit in how well patients get through treatment and the reduction in toxicity. But it's very hard to show in a clinical trial. And in fact, we've as a oncology, pediatric oncology specialty, have decided that it's unethical to actually do clinical trials in kids, because we know, you know, kids are much more sensitive to radiation, and protons reduces that radiation. So we actually don't have any randomized clinical trials for that reason. So our vision at Sibley and at Johns Hopkins, though, is to take that further, to really try to show more concretely the advantages to protons. And Hopkins is really dedicated to that, in that they built a very large center. So it's a 4-room center. Most centers are 1 to 2 rooms. And one of those rooms is dedicated completely to research. So we will treat patients in 3 of those rooms, and 1 room will be dedicated to lab and animal research. The other thing that Hopkins has done, which is pretty visionary, is dedicated one of those rooms to pediatrics. So most proton centers will treat some kids and then some adults, and it's a mix throughout the day. Our center will have a room specifically for kids. All the staff that uses that room will be, you know, there for treating pediatric protons. And so aside from St. Jude, which is a children's hospital and doesn't treat adults, we are the only proton center in the U.S., and then we'll have a room dedicated to pediatrics. Wow. And I think that's going to give us, you know, a large advantage in terms of the satisfaction of our pediatric population, the volume we can treat, and the quality of care that these kids get.
Yeah, remarkable vision and plan, not only in terms of pediatrics, but also in terms of the research that needs to be done in some ways to help iron out some of the issues we have with protons. What are the biggest controversies about protons? Is it cost? Is it that we're never going to have the real head-to-head data that we need? I could go on about in the adult world. You know, we've had some mixed data with protons, but as it relates to your profession and the pediatric patient population, what are the real? You've mentioned some of these, but just to the people out there, to be fair balanced, what are some of the issues?
So, compared to adults, pediatrics, it's much more accepted. So most indications, for the reasons we talked about, the reduction in dose, it's much more accepted. You know, kids are much more sensitive to radiation. Everything that you touch is growing in kids, whereas in adults, most of the things have matured. So there isn't a ton of controversy. One of the areas is in actually tumors with a poor prognosis. So there are some types of brain tumors that, you know, the survival is not as high as we'd like, and so using a technology that's really geared towards sparing kids from toxicity 10 or 20 years out may not be the best choice when the chance of kids making that long, you know, surviving that long is really the case. I have argued that, you know, if we're going in treating these kids curatively, that it shouldn't matter, that if they have a chance, then everyone should get the benefit of you know, this potential reduction in long-term side effects, no matter their prognosis. But in a healthcare climate where we are trying to grapple with costs, that's one of the ways that insurance companies have pushed back. It's interesting in that when I was in my residency, that there was the same controversy with something called IMRT, or intensely modulated radiation, compared to the old 3D radiation, where we just point a couple beams at the patient and treat. And the same arguments came up that IMRT, which ended up being, you know, probably a few thousand dollars more per treatment than the conventional radiation, there was a lot of pushback. And even though we could show that we were sparing normal tissue from this toxicity, because there wasn't any clinical data yet, insurance companies pushed back. The margin of improvement from conventional radiation to IMRT is about four magnitudes less than what you get from IMRT to protons. And so, you know, were the costs competitive, I think there would be no issues. So I really do think cost is what's objectionable to the insurance companies.
Okay. So you've mentioned, you know, the current tumors that protons really work for, and I just want to loop back on this. So clearly brain tumors, pediatric brain tumors, and Hodgkin's are currently tumors that protons are being utilized in?
Well, Hodgkin's, those were a lot of patients that we get for our radiation center now from Children's National. We do send a lot of our proton cases to other proton centers if we feel that they need it, and our proton center isn't open yet. But in terms of, you know, once it's open, we will see a lot of head and neck tumors in children, so sarcomas, rhabdomyosarcomas that arise in the head and neck, tumors in the chest that are close to important structures like the lungs and heart and spinal cord, same in the abdomen where you want to protect the kidneys. Really, any tumor that arises in close proximity to a structure that's really important that you want to protect, protons have an advantage in that respect.
Okay. There
are certain things that we do oftentimes for prophylactic coverage for things like leukemias. We will treat the whole brain, or for kids who have lung metastases, we will treat the whole lung. When we're treating an entire structure and we're not trying to protect something, we actually use the conventional radiation because that's actually an easier and faster way to cover a larger area. But everything else, if there's something that can be protected, then typically we'll use protons.
So I want you to get your proton crystal ball out. You're a researcher and also a clinician and one of the first proton pediatric fellows. Where are we heading with this? Is it in combination with chemotherapy, immunotherapy? Is there any particular area that excites you and where we're heading with this?
Absolutely. There's a lot of exciting stuff coming down the pipeline. And a lot of it has to do with experimental agents that are coming out from your side, from the medical oncology. So both Children's National and Hopkins are incredible institutions and have a huge access to new clinical drug development. So some of the things that we're working on now are actually, one of the Hopkins projects is a mini brain project where if you are a kid and you have a brain tumor, we will remove some of your blood cells and grow, using neurostimulators, a small brain-like organelle. And then we can actually take cells from your tumor and inject that into the brain organelle, and it creates a much more realistic environment to test drugs and chemotherapy.
An avatar,
exactly. That's actually what it's called. It's an avatar project. And then we will use combinations of you know, very directed protons and chemotherapy to sort of test what's best for your tumor. So in this era of personalized medicine, this is one of the ways we hope to use this technology. Another one that we're doing is actually using gold nanoparticles with genes attached to them. So there's a gene called P53 that is absent in a lot of pediatric tumors, and so we will use very focused proton radiation to sort of stun the tumor and open it up, and then inject or infuse these children with these radio-labeled P53 genes, and in the normal cells, it's already present, and so it doesn't have any toxicity, but in the tumor cells, it turns on and actually starts fighting from within, helping to reduce these tumors. So there's a lot of great projects like that. There's also a lot of research that we can do on how, there's still a lot of unknowns in how protons interact in different tissues, and really it's only been used, you know, over the last 15 to 20 years frequently in terms of clinical volume. So having this research room is going to tell us a lot about how we can improve the growth and development of kids moving forward.
Yeah, it's incredible you listing all these research projects. I think if we were here 5 years ago, we would have said this was science fiction. And this is reality, the things that we're doing, these avatar experiments and others, really recapitulating personalized medicine within a dish and then learning from that and then reintroducing that strategy back into patients. It's an incredible story. And this goes with medical oncology as well. But some of the advents in technology have really allowed us to forward the science. And I think protons are no exception to that. Well, thanks, Matt, and thank you for listening. The Kimmel Cancer Center digital footprint is continuing to grow. You can now subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and follow us on Twitter at Hopkins Kimmel for the news and information surrounding cancer research, and to follow along as we move towards completion and launch of our Proton Center here at Sibley. And I very much look forward to having protons here in the very near future. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you, Ben.